Welcome to the Full Literacy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy. Recording is 2:12 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is May 9th. I'm recording an hour early because I've got a couple of meetings this afternoon. So I thought I'd kick off with NVIDIA. The share was down a tad in here today, but I think the more important point is that it's up a lot since the October low, and it's almost doubled in just this year alone. And the natural response from anyone who could possibly compete with the company is, I want some of that too. So what we're definitely starting to see is, in the aftermath of the reveal of ChatGPT, that companies are scrambling to get ahead of it. So there's two responses. The first, I think, would be the Microsoft response, which is to embrace AI and everything that comes with it. And Microsoft have rolled out its AI into its Bing and or its Bing search engine and its own Edge internet browser. Of course, you have to download their internet browser, which is absolutely filled with junky news, in order to avail of that AI. But they are going full steam ahead and not really worried about any of the negative consequences. Then there are other people. And what they are basically worried about is that AI is going too fast, that it's going to cause problems, that there will be questions about the outlook for, I think, probably the best way to think about it is that there are going to be challenges around data secrecy, around piracy, around intellectual property, around information wars, all of these sorts of things. And lots of companies are talking about that and even saying that they're not willing to take on additional business as a result of it. So, for example, C3AI is one of those. They said that there's actually business they're willing to turn away. Well, they were also quite clear in stating that there are plenty of other companies that will probably take on that work, and Palantir are probably one of those. And the share was up today in a fairly dynamic manner, and right on the cusp now of pushing up and through the $10 area and surmounting the IPO level. I remember being at a meeting of like-minded people about a decade ago, and a highly experienced investment banker just made the observation that over years he had noticed that it was usually after an IPO, when a company had regained its IPO price, that was usually a good sign that investors were willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. And that perhaps the hype had been excised and that it was possibly then able to improve from there. So it's generally, I think, and I think there's a good amount of sense to that kind of statement. So when we look at a company like Palantir, where it did surge in 2020, then gave up the entire advance and more, has been in a base formation now for, I guess, a little bit more than a year, then if it can sustain a move up through the $10 area, then that will be a vote of confidence. And, of course, then you have Microsoft and AMD getting together and talking about developing their own AI chips. So AMD is bouncing really quite impressively now from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, the trend up from the initial breakout in 2016 is over. So it definitely needs a new story, and perhaps AI is the new story. But I think trending back up towards $160, which was the peak back in 2021, seems like a bit of an ask. We could be in a prolonged period of volatile ranging, but the amplitude of that range could be from 60 to 160. So that would basically be well in excess of 100% from trough to peak. And I think that's probably my base case for what we can expect from the semiconductor sector in a benign environment. So Then let's just think about what else is going on in the world. Well, gold prices were quite a bit steadier and continuing to firm here from the 2000 level. And this is about the most benign possible outcome one could imagine, that we get a period of consolidation in the region of a big psychological level like the 2000, that the short-term overbought condition in the region of the peaks from back in 2020 and 2022 is unwound in an orderly fashion, and then subsequently prices can improve from there. And of course, it would really behoove us to remember that ranges are explosions waiting to happen, and gold prices have been going sideways now for in excess of 2 years. And then silver has also been really steady, having broken the sequence of lower rally highs that's been in evidence now for over 2 years. I thought that it was quite unlikely that it was going to hold all of this move, and therefore my position sizing was reasonably small relative to, well, quite a bit smaller, in fact, relative to the gold position. But it has held up really very admirably, and it's unwinding the short-term overbought condition just by doing nothing. But I think that there's still the potential that we could get a little bit of weakness at some stage. But nonetheless, the more back history we look at, the more this looks like this entire range over the last 2.5 years looks like a first step above the base. And when we see a breakout like this, then the surprises are more likely than not to be on the upside, and that any point of weakness is likely to be a buying opportunity. Then I think platinum prices are also starting to price in the potential that South Africa's electricity condition, or the supply of electricity in South Africa, is rather questionable, and that there is clear scope here that the price will surge through the $1,200 level. This looks like a bullish consolidation, and there's been a very lengthy period of ranging that's been underway now since 2015. And I think it's also particularly relevant to just look at the fact that platinum and relative to gold has been at a really significant discount for a very long time. So just thinking about the spread between the two. Back in 2009, or I guess 2007 really, there was a $1,000 premium on platinum over gold. Now there's a $1,000 discount. So that's been an incredible reversal of fortune. And it's worth just going back and looking at the history that all the way back to the 1980s, platinum had never traded below the price of gold. And now it's trading way below it. So it's as much a precious metal as it is an industrial metal, and it needs a new source of demand. Well, potentially, hydrogen fuel cells could be that source of demand to drive a prolonged period of outperformance. But in the short term, a supply deficit, particularly if platinum mines in South Africa get shut down, could be that potential catalyst. If the price can sustain a move up and through that $1,200 level, that would really complete the base formation. Then palladium prices are steadying from the region of the lower side of this range that now that's been forming now since 2020. Now this is incredibly volatile trading, and the amplitude is in excess of 100% from trough to peak. And considering the loss of uptrend consistency, I think the only thing that we can predict is that there's going to be a difficult time predicting. But there's certainly evidence of support being found here in the $1,500 area. And of course, the real reason that platinum and palladium have been at these rather extraordinary levels, high for palladium and low for platinum, is because there has been an an acute reluctance to retool within the automotive sector. All of the investment within the automotive sector has gone into the electric vehicle sector. So they're not investing in catalytic converter retooling because they don't anticipate buying catalytic converters. So medium term, that can't possibly be beneficial for palladium, but at least in the short term, it is certainly steadying. Then I continue to monitor this situation with the oil tanker in Malaysia that's literally had its deck blown off. Now, it's really incredibly lucky for the global environmental condition that the oil tanker was actually empty when it blew up. Now, oil prices are steadying here from the $70 area, and OPEC Plus are attempting to curtail some of the supply. But there is less demand, and China's exports are contracting. Now, that doesn't say much about the domestic Chinese economy, but it certainly says a lot about the international economy, that the global economy is slowing down and that will eventually hit demand. But then we should be thinking about what would happen if there is a massive oil spill and the vessel is not insured. Well, the Baltic Dry Index continues to steady here from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, the 18-month sequence of lower rally highs is still intact, but this looks like a bullish consolidation. It suggests that there is going to be more demand that potentially that some of the ships that and this is really the biggest problem here. There's a shadow fleet, and it's primarily made up of ships that probably should have been junked. So the kinds of ships that are available that would fit into the Baltic Dry Index, or the well, excuse me, it's not the Baltic Dry Index. It's the Baltic Dirty Index, Dirty Tanker Index. This is also beginning to steady now, following an acute decline. So we have the tanker prices starting to steady, and we have the oil tankers, so bulk shipping and oil tankers, excuse me, starting to steady. I think that there is potential here that the dirty tanker index has probably found a low, and it's at the upper side of the long-term base formation. And the number of ships that are available to fit into this index is probably contracting. And there isn't a rush out there to go out and build a lot more tankers. And then it does mean that the kinds of companies that do have available ships should be in a better position. Now, Scorpio Tankers, having rallied very impressively from the peak, excuse me, from the lows in early 2022, has broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. So if the dirty tanker index is going to bounce, then it would be highly convenient for the share. If, on the other hand, we do not see a significant bounce from the dirty tanker index, well, then one of the best performing subsectors globally does look like it is starting to roll over. And Ardmore is another one of those companies that had been doing exceptionally well and has also pulled back in a very violent manner. So it's right in the region of the 200-day moving average. It has certainly broken the long-term malaise, where we'd seen prices contracting for a very prolonged period. But having gone up so incredibly quickly from approximately 3 at the beginning of 2022 to 19, this is a significant setback. It's a massive reaction against the prevailing trend after an incredible acceleration, and it suggests a peak of at least near term and probably medium term significance, if not at potentially a multi-year peak. So what happens in terms of those dirty tanker prices is going to be particularly interesting. Then we have the energy spider, where prices have steadied in line with the oil price. Now it looks toppy. We had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend in 2022, and we've had an almost year-long process of right-hand extension in the region of the peaks from back in 2014. And if the uptrend is to be given the benefit of the doubt, then the low put in this week, or I guess at the end of last week, needs to hold. Most particularly, it needs to hold the low from the middle of March and the $75 area. And of course, energy was among the best performing sectors for two consecutive years, and it has held up really quite admirably in 2023 as well. And of course, a lot of the larger companies have been buying back their shares and increasing their dividends, and that has been welcomed by investors. Now, Exxon is also bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average, and it had exceeded the peak from back in 2014. And Shell has also been steadying here in the region of the 200-day moving average. So we're at a critical area for the oil market and for the major oil companies. Now, one thing that should help these companies is that natural gas prices do appear to be bottoming, and the natural gas price is steadying around the $2 area. So, having declined from 10 to 2, we're back in economic levels where natural gas is competitive with coal. As interest rates remain high and liquidity conditions remain tight, that is weighing on some of the renewable energy investments. So the wind ETF is right in the region of both the 200-day and the 1,000-day moving average, and the solar sector has also come back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So there are, I think, three significant moving parts to this argument. The first is that building these things requires cash, and cash isn't nearly as available. So that's weighing on the ability to get the projects off the ground, and the business models rely on access to cheap liquidity. Then you have the clear incentive from the Inflation Reduction Act to build. So that's a support, and that is likely to be beneficial for the sector when interest rates do eventually roll over. And then, of course, we have higher energy prices overall, and that's helping to encourage some demand. But nobody wants to have these things in their backyard. So that is one of the problems. But I think the most important third aspect is that China is the majority exporter of solar panels, and China is the majority exporter of batteries. And the kinds of companies that we have, for example, BYD, the vehicles that they're producing are reasonably competitive with Teslas and certainly cost competitive. So the share is starting to steady in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, the most important news for BYD is that Berkshire Hathaway are reducing their position, and the share really hasn't gone anywhere for the last 2 years, and they certainly rode it higher. There's certainly a price war underway, but the much bigger picture is that China produces the most batteries in the world. They've already got access to the best mining resources for all the components for those batteries, and the rest of the world is playing catch up nominally, but is miles behind. And then you have CATL, which is among the most advanced battery producers in the world. And That's a major coup for China. But the share isn't really responding. And it continues to pause here around the 1,000-day moving average. And I think part of the reason for that is they're spending a lot of money on R&D, and they're spending a lot of money on building manufacturing capacity. But if we play this forward a decade, if the entire fleet of transportation, our land transportation, is going to go electric, then China is going to be the dominant force in it. And I think when we get to geopolitical considerations, surely someone is going to come up with the question whether that's actually a good idea. Then I think we can also think about the deal that Boeing and Ryanair have just signed. So Boeing's price was in positive territory today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. Ryanair, on the other hand, they admitted to the fact that they paid more than last time for the planes that they're buying. But on an inflation-adjusted basis, the chances are that Ryanair is getting a very good deal. And they probably were able to squeeze Boeing because they decided to buy those 737 MAXes. And the only thing anyone ever remembers about those planes is that they fall out of the sky. But Ryanair is certainly firming here in and pushing up towards the upper side of this range that's been forming for the last 6 years. But it was the delivery times that really drew my attention from 2027 out to 2033. And that's a long lead time. So when we see these breathless discussions about electric planes, well, they might eventually take over from jet-fueled planes, jet-fuel-fueled planes. But that's not something that's going to happen for decades. That Ryanair has an initial order for 150 of these planes and has another option on an extra 150. And when they go into service over the next decade, then they'll stay in service for at least another decade, if not 2 decades. And then those planes will get sold on to other carriers. When an electric plane is eventually permitted, designed, built, it could be 20 years from now. And I think that has to be considered, that these kinds of planes might find their way into the commuter belt or into the commuter plane sector. But when we talk about long bodies or even wide-bodied planes, then the lead times for the buying process is years and decades in the planning. And Boeing was building the 747 for nearly 50 years, and the kinds of these are the kinds of money that has to go into the building of these planes is extraordinary. I just don't believe that it's realistic. But what it does mean is that if we're not going to have electric planes in the next 5 or 6 years, then carbon prices are going to rise, and politicians will levy a tax on airfares, and they'll ensure that people end up paying more for discretionary decisions to travel, and that is also likely to raise revenues. It's going to make the airline sector even more competitive, which of course is why Ryanair is doing better, because they continue to stick to the lowest cost. It is the higher cost producers are going to have greater difficulty. So we're certainly in an era of transition. But the most important thing, though, is that 10-year yields have started to steady again around the 3.5% level. Investors are not quite yet willing to believe that the Federal Reserve is going to start cutting rates aggressively. And we continue to have very tight monetary conditions. We have an inverted yield curve, and the 10-year minus the 3-month is still trending downwards. So We generally have a benign stock market environment as long as that is the case. It's usually only when that trend of contraction breaks that we see a big change in the outlook for the stock market. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.